Folks, we lost a legend yesterday. Rest in peace, Eddie Van Halen. We'll talk a little bit about that, man. That band meant a lot to me growing up. Anyway, the Gonzo Chronicles. Let's get into this. Pals and Blues Hammer. Some bumper music. Thanks again, guys. I know I thank them every episode, but awfully nice of them to let me use some of their tunes. And hopefully you guys like blues music too. Good stuff to me, man. I could sit and listen to blues all day. And hopefully not commit suicide at night, you know? Hey, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but anybody been paying attention to sports? Yeah, I didn't think so. MLB playoffs are going right now. I watch a little bit of baseball, but I don't know if, for those that know me, God, I love baseball. Opening day is like Christmas to me. I love it. But this year, everything's so messed up with this pandemic that can't really get into any particular sport. Those that started back up, it's shortened seasons. No fans are in attendance. They're piping in fan noise on TV, and it's still not the same. It's just not the same. I would rather them turn the fan noise off and just like listen to the game and the announcers. You know, I'm okay with that uncomfortable silence, but maybe their audience generally isn't. I don't know. But ratings are down across the board for every freaking sport, even NFL. And I've been a part of a fantasy football league for 20 years. And still, I know people that, even in the league, that just tuned out some this year. You know, it's kind of weird. Basketball ratings, the NBA Finals are going right now between the Miami Heat and the LA Lakers. And I've seen some highlights, but, you know, again, I haven't watched one game. I don't think I've watched one game through the entire playoffs. And a lot of people speculate on why the ratings are down. I could be wrong, so check this yourself, but the NBA Finals or maybe the NBA playoffs, one of the two, the ratings are down over 40% from last year. And I think it's maybe a combination of two things where just like everything has been made political. And those who live in a political bubble and their politics is their religion, or people who are just amped up easily by everything that is meant to trigger them, you know, maybe they like it. Most of us out here in middle America, you know, the 75% or the 70% that's not like on the fringe left or right, you know, we just live our lives and we get involved in politics when it's, you know, necessary, I guess. You know, election time, and we don't live and die by politics every single day. Those who sit and dwell on the news and watch the news constantly 24/7, well, maybe that's the bubble they live in. But for the rest of us, like when you mix politics and sports, even cultural things, when you're shaming people or agreeing or not agreeing or disagreeing with you or you know, trying to like learn and stay neutral, like it's just not working. And I think they've turned off a huge part of their audience, all sports, this year. This year more than any other because, I guess ever since Kaepernick started taking a knee in football and politics got injected into everything, you know, I enjoy sports, but I've tuned out because I don't like anybody's politics. Even if it's something I agree with, I don't want to hear about it at halftime. I don't want to hear about it, you know, during the seventh inning stretch, or I don't want play. I know people are have every right to their opinion. Every player, every coach, that's fine. And there's a time and place for it. I may have a political opinion, but I don't go barking at my clients my political opinion unless I want to ruin my business. So I wouldn't do that. I just kind of keep my politics to myself. It's personal, the way it should be. You know, I know how I'm going to vote, but you don't, and that's fine. You shouldn't. I'm not here to convince anybody one way or the other of anything. Which brings me to another pet peeve. Man, Facebook. Jesus, people. Every other post on there is political. What happened to, like, cute kittens and puppy dogs and whatever the hell you were having for dinner? Go back to that. Like, you know, it's people are so argumentative on social media that it almost makes you social media not worth it. However, my bigger pet peeve than that, like, folks, listen, everybody knows how they're voting. No, I don't know who these so-called independents are that are out there that are on the fence, because these two candidates in the presidential election could not be further apart. If you, everybody knows how they're voting. I think the independent candidate that NBC tried to push the other night is just a myth. Kind of like unicorns and midgets. The only time you ever see them is on TV, right? So I don't buy that. So everybody knows how they're voting. Yeah, and you're not going to convince anybody otherwise on, you know, so just knock off the political shit. However, that being said, Facebook on October 1st, I believe it was October 1st, they were going to start censoring people and removing political posts that they deemed not factual. Well, who the hell are they to tell me what a fact is? Who's fact-checking the fact-checkers? I don't believe in censorship. That's a bigger pet peeve than all the people posting their political stuff online and being argumentative about it or belligerent or insulting, you know. If somebody doesn't agree with you, that does not make them a bigot or a racist or a fascist or whatever, a socialist or whatever the hell. You know, so folks, it's okay to have a rational discussion. Most of the time, you can't have one behind a keyboard. Just go sit down, have a cold beer with somebody that you disagree with, have a cordial chat, and then, you know, move on. Talk about something else. So that's kind of, you know, kind of fascist in and of itself for a corporation to be. It's their platform. They can do whatever the hell they want. It's free for us. But we have to understand that there's a value to the freedom of speech. And I don't think any corporation should be taking it away from anybody. Somebody may come on with a firmly held religious belief that they deem as a fact in their life. And as a matter of fact, it may have impacted their life to such a positive degree and they want to share it with people. Well, just because somebody else may be atheist and whatever that person's religion was that they shared doesn't mean they should have to go back and say this is false and, you know, this is a lie or whatever, and then censor a person. I don't believe in censorship at all. Well, you know, within reason. You know, I don't want to see, like, kiddie porn all over social media platforms or anywhere for that matter. But, you know, within reason. But that's the point. Like, why are these social media companies all of a sudden restricting people's freedom of speech? Because if you can't share your thoughts, then once you control, well, if you, anybody who's ever read Orwell's 84 or Animal Farm, I think it was the other book he wrote, you understand if you can control people's speech, then eventually that leads to controlling their thoughts. That is a very dangerous thing to do. So that would be like me saying, hey, I'm all about freedom of speech, but when you say something I disagree with, then I'm not for freedom of speech for you. What the hell would that make me? Kind of a bit of a tyrant, don't you think? So if you look at it in that context, if someone did that to you, well, yeah, that wouldn't be cool at all. I don't care what your opinion is. You have a you're a valued member of humanity. Share your opinion if you feel like you need to. And that opinion should be discussed. It could be right, it could be wrong. But that should be left to rational people to have rational discussions, not to be melted down into childlike insults. That's what we see on social media a lot these days. But it doesn't mean Facebook is cool to censor it. As a matter of fact, I've actually been thinking about jumping off of that platform because it's, I can't support somebody that doesn't support freedom of speech. But then again, if you get off that platform, you're running from that fight. And that's a fight that's very much worth, you know, fighting for. Because I would certainly hate to lose freedom of speech for you or me. Yeah, so that's a pet peeve. You know what another pet peeve is? These damn Liberty Insurance commercials. I'm so sick of that emu. Did you ever have that commercial, like, as soon as it comes on, you hear it in the background, you're like, oh, God, not again. Some of these things, like that Casper the Friendly Ghost one. Yeah, that's annoying as hell. That's Geico. What's with these insurance companies trying to be funny? I don't get it. But, you know, my worst pet peeve, obviously, is watching people try to drive through the parking lot at Walmart. Not very cool. You know, at Walmart, I hate to shop at Walmart. I seldom ever go there unless I absolutely have to for something. I live in a small town, so, you know, my choices are kind of limited, unless I want to drive an hour away. And sometimes I do to avoid Walmart. The thing is, though, like, if you just pull into the parking lot, park at the end, like the very back, just sit there and watch. You notice that Walmart will go paint arrows on the pavement, showing people which aisles to drive down and which aisles they drive up. They clearly give you directions. How many dumbasses go the wrong way? Like, I will sit there and watch that and be like, wow. Wow, how many people can't even follow simple directions? And almost, like, I'll spot, like, four or five near misses, collisions at the parking lot. Just in the parking lot, people driving through trying to park or get out. Because dumbasses do not know how to look and read and follow directions that are painted on the... What does that tell you about Walmart shoppers? And I just probably insulted everybody listening to this thing. But God, I hate Walmart. I really do. If people can't follow instructions that are painted on the damn pavement on how to drive properly through the parking lot, in this time of COVID, when you go in and they have the arrows on the floor on which way you're supposed to walk, do you think anybody's paying attention to that too? Doubt it. I doubt it. All right, let's get to the sad news. Before we get into a couple of topics, a topic I wanted to get into today, we're going to talk about another urban legend, these black-eyed kids. If you haven't heard of that, Google it while you're listening to this. This is kind of creepy. But, man, we lost a legend in our culture and in rock music. Eddie Van Halen passed away yesterday on October 6th after a long fight with cancer. Now, Eddie Van Halen, one of my first albums I ever heard was Van Halen's 1984. When I heard that song Jump, and then I really loved that song Jump when it came out. I was a kid. I was about 10 years old, I guess, when that album came out. And then I heard Panama, and then I'm like, wow, I'm hooked on Van Halen. So Rush Out, you know, 10 years old, I make my big sister, I think she went and bought the cassette for me. Well, actually, she probably bought it for her, and I just hijacked it. But I would listen to Top Jimmy, and then that was one of my favorite songs on that. And then Hot for Teacher, that video came out. And when you're a 10-year-old kid watching that video, Hot for Teacher, yeah, you start like coming of age all of a sudden. What an awesome, awesome band Van Halen is still, you know, was. Back in that day, though, Eddie Van Halen revolutionized guitar playing. He made guitar playing cool. As a matter of fact, I asked for a guitar at that point when I heard Van Halen. And, you know, when I was an early teen, it's like, man, I really want to play guitar because I loved that style of music. And when I was a kid, I must admit, I was a big hair metal fan. You know, I loved all the pop metal, you know, the Poison, Kiss, Motley Crue. Van Halen was, you know, they were head and shoulders above almost every other band. And it was because of their guitar player, Eddie Van Halen. Everyone just knew that guy was, they dubbed him as the best in the world, right? The best guitar player in the world. Now, who knows? But he revolutionized, you know, again, what guitar players did in an era. And I thought it was just amazing. And that's sad to hear, man. I was lucky enough to see Van Halen twice. I never got to see him with David Lee Roth, obviously, because I was just a, you know, 10-year-old kid when 84 came out. Then that was the last album they made together. But I did get to see them later on in Knoxville when Sammy Hagar was the frontman. And one thing I liked about Van Halen was they had opening acts sometimes that you'd never heard of. And they had a band, I think it was an Australian band at the time, called Baby Animals. And had a female lead singer. And they were really, really good. I actually went out and got that CD after that. So it's always kind of cool that, you know, they were big enough that they didn't need to have another good band on the ticket, or another popular band on the ticket to draw ticket sales, because I mean they were putting asses in the seats with just their name. But they always tend to give other bands an opportunity to be heard that normally might not get to be heard on that scale, because you go to a Van Halen concert, man, there's more people there than a Trump rally, to be honest with you. It's like it's nuts. But you know, Van Halen, you know, had such a big impact, and just to be able to see him live in Knoxville, and it was on the album they had called For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge, and that's the one they had. I think Pound Cake was the first song that came off of that in video, and I'm trying to think what else. Top of the World, I think, was on that too. I don't have it in front of me, so I'm just kind of trying to remember, and I haven't heard that album in a long time, but I remember. I had a rule when I was a kid. If I went to a concert and I stayed out late, I had to get up and go to school the next day. So that was fine. I got up and went to school the next day. A buddy of mine rode with me because I would go with my sister and her boyfriend, which is her husband now. And I would go, I'd ride along. And a friend of mine, Keith, went with me. And he bought a t-shirt, and it had the acronym, you know, for the album. For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge, F-U-C-K. So he had t-shirts that Van Halen, F period, U period, C period, K period, dash, N, live. You know? So he wore that shirt to school the next day, so they would send him home early. So I wasn't smart enough to do something like that, but he certainly was. He wore it to school and got told to leave, and he went home and went back to bed. Good for him, I guess. I would have caught a beating if I wore a shirt like that in front of my family, though. But it was a great show. I remember that. It was just, you know, one of those memories when you're a kid. You know, it's like, geez, I'm seeing this huge band. And then years later, after Sammy Hagar was out of the band, I actually went down to Charlotte again with my sister and saw Van Halen with Gary Cherone, who used to be the front man for... I think the band Extreme, and a lot of people didn't like that. And I mean, I had that album too, VH3. It was just different, you know. I mean, it wasn't the same type of Van Halen music. It was different, but it was still good. And he did a great job doing the covers of all the old tunes. And I sat way back, but then it was an outdoor concert in Charlotte at what was at the time called Blockbuster Pavilion, I guess after the old Blockbuster video stores that only one are still in existence. But I got to move up, and I was maybe like 10 rows back, and right in front of Michael Anthony, the bass player, who actually was one of my favorite guys in the band. He was just kind of always chill and not, I don't know. He didn't come across as like some elitist rock guy, but he just seemed like a cool guy. Like, I'd go out and have a beer with him now, you know, if I ever run into the guy, I'd buy the guy a beer. But, you know, seemed like a cool guy. I follow him on Instagram. But... Van Halen was such a big part of probably most of our lives. If you're anywhere in, you know, grew up, if you're Generation X or even after that, their music's just legendary. And, you know, long live Eddie Van Halen, man. He will be missed. I didn't know if Van Halen was ever going to do another album, but if, you know, still can live in the old days. Those are great tunes. If you haven't heard Van Halen, go pick up, pick up 1984 as a good starter, and then pick up 5150. That's the album, the first album they did with Sammy Hagar. It's actually the first album they ever did that went number one on Billboard. So that was amazing. And then if you really want to get into the old good stuff, go get Diver Down under the David Lee Roth years, or Women and Children First, or Fair Warnings. They had so many great albums. Every album was great. I haven't heard one bad album by Van Halen ever, or even a song I didn't like. And certainly, I've never heard a solo quite as good as Eddie Van Halen live in concert. So if you want to experience Eddie Van Halen, there's a video, a DVD you can buy, or you can maybe just download it or something. It's called Van Halen Live Without a Net. And I own that DVD. So anytime I want to watch Van Halen with Sammy Hagar as a front man, what an amazing hour and 45 minute show. Good stuff. Check them out. Long live Eddie. But let's get into this weird urban legend. I've been on a kick with these urban legends lately. And one urban legend is about these black-eyed children. Now, what the hell are black-eyed children? Well, if you go back and just do a Google search on these, people have spotted at various times children between the ages of 6 and 16. They have really pale skin. Sometimes they're seen hitchhiking or panhandling, or they'll show up at the doorsteps of residential homes, and they just look like normal kids that are just kind of really pale. But if you stop and take a look and notice their eyes are solid black, and they're referred to as black-eyed children. Now, the thing that's weird about these children is that they're very blunt, and not only that, you get this ominous feeling, and then you start feeling kind of like you're being drained of energy, but they're always trying to either get in your car or get in your house, or they'll just say, you need to let us in, or let me in your car, you're going to let me in your car, you're going to walk me up to your house. It's not like they're actually panhandling and asking you for money so they can go, you know, buy a joint. I mean, they're actually trying to get into your home, into your car, and they're very forceful about it. Not pushy, violent, but you get the sense that they would be. So one of the things that they claim is like when people have seen them, that they literally feel the energy draining from them. Now, some claim that these children that supposedly show up once in a while hitchhiking or panhandling have been sighted since the 1930s. And I don't know how necessarily true that is. When they were first spotted, sometimes some refer back to the tabloids back in the 80s, like the old National Enquirer, when you would check out at the supermarket, you would see these weird magazines up there, like, or newspapers like, you know, the Lizard Man of South Carolina spotted, you know, or half baby, half alligator born in Moscow, or some weird stuff, right? But anyway, whether it goes back to the 30s or like first started in the 80s, there is actually one person actually that thinks this started in. If you trace it online, you find a person that actually mentioned it for the first time online back in 96 or 98 in a chat room that just brought this up, like people that were like talking about weird things that had happened to them. So I'm going to read a little excerpt here from rare.us, because apparently the first person who ever talked about it online was a guy by the name of Brian Bethel. And it says here, Brian Bethel was one of the first people to document having met black-eyed children in real life. He published a transcription of the event in his blog back in 1998. Okay, the following is part of his story. It was around 9:30 p.m. on January 16th, 1998, and Brian left his apartment in Abilene, Texas, for the Dropbox to pay his internet bill. On the way, he stopped at the Dollar Movie Theater next to his service provider's building to use the glow of the marquee as a light to make out his check. Now, as he did this, there was a knock on the window, and he saw two young boys. He placed them between 10 and 14 years old, and he described the boys like this. Boy number one was slightly taller than his companion, wearing a pullover, a hooded shirt with a sort of gray checked pattern, and jeans. He couldn't see his shoes. His skin was olive colored and had curly medium-length brown hair, and he exuded an air of confidence. Boy number two had pale skin, with a trace of freckles. His primary characteristic seemed to be looking around nervously. He was dressed in a similar way, but his pullover was light green. His hair was sort of pale orange, and they didn't appear to be related, at least directly. So almost immediately, he knew something was up and felt a sense of fear. The first boy began to tell Bethel that they needed his help. they wanted to see the new Mortal Kombat movie, but forgot their money. Instead of asking for the money itself, the boys asked for a lift to their house to retrieve it. Our narrator is nervous and hesitant as the first boy continued to try to coax him, saying things like, "Come on, mister, we just want to go to our house. And we're just two little boys. And come on, mister, let us in. We can't get in your car until you do, you know. Just let us in and we'll be gone before you know it. We'll go to our mother's house." Bethel found himself unlocking the door without realizing, and if instructed by the child to do so, after catching his hands, he looks back at the kids with a fresh perspective, and that's when he realized the kids' eyes were solid black. No iris, no pupil. All the stories of the people meeting black-eyed kids claim that once you realize their eyes are all black, things get dangerous. The second boy continued to stand there completely silent while the first boy threatens him, saying, "We won't hurt you. You have to let us in. We don't have a gun." According to Bethel, the boy was implying that they didn't need guns. He started pulling at the door and demanding to be let in. With the courage he managed to find, Bethel pushed his car into reverse and sped home, leaving the boys where he found them. Now, that's a little creepy. But this particular website has all kinds of different sightings and you know, kind of delves into, you know, what they are. Actually, I've seen a couple of shows on television on Travel Channel that will go into like weird mysteries or urban legends, things like that, or that have talked about black-eyed kids. But there's really not a whole lot. One of the first recorded sightings, actually, that I found dates well before Bethel. Before I do that, there was actually another one. He was in Abilene. There was another one, actually, online at that time that said it was in Portland, Oregon. So whether it was Abilene or Portland, Oregon, was kind of thrown up in the air. The ghost hunters, actually, on these ghost hunting shows, they tend to think that they're one of three things. You know, pale skin, a lot of times. Are they vampires? That's one thing that some people have tossed out. Another tossed out that they might actually be ghosts. The one that I found most interesting is that they actually might be human extraterrestrial hybrids. Because you ever notice when you see on pictures that are drawn of people that have seen aliens, the typical gray alien with the solid black eyes? That's kind of an interesting theory, if in fact these were ever to exist. But here's the what some description of what they normally come like. Usually in groups of 2 to 4. They wear outdated clothes. They speak oddly, as if it's not their native language that they're speaking. Again, pushy and demanding, like we just saw in Bethel's case. Appear to disappear without explanation. And, you know, they always want in your car, your home, your life in some way. Some say that they actually exhibit something like psychic powers and can affect electrical devices. I haven't read anything about that, but just that's some of the description that I saw online. But I haven't read a story that led to that. And also it says they have an aura that disturbs animals. But it leads me to kind of a few questions that I'll get into. But I wanted to, before I get into some of my questions I had about these, I'll get into another story here. One of the earliest recorded sightings of black-eyed children was actually back in 1950. A 16-year-old named Harold apparently was strolling up the street to his home in Virginia when he noticed a boy leaning on a nearby fence. Harold said hello but received no response. He turned to leave, then the mysterious boy finally spoke, said, "I want to go to your house. You're going to walk me up to your house." That's when Harold apparently noticed the boy's eyes. Pitch black again. So all his instincts were telling him to run, but he just stood there like he couldn't move. It's almost like the kid was reading his mind. He said, "You don't want to run away from me. You're going to walk me up to your house." And at that point, I guess Harold, that was enough to jolt him back into reality. And he hightailed out of there. And that was another report that I had read. Now, so here's another interesting thing about black-eyed children. I found Actually, let me find this again. I found a story that actually related them to an old Indian legend, which I thought was quite fascinating, actually. I want to find this again real quick, if you'll bear with me. I should be more prepared on these podcasts. I should actually print this shit out. Don't you think? It might run a little smoother. But hey, what do you need? You got time to kill, right? Here it is. The Iroquois Indians believed in a dark power called the Otkon, and that's spelled O-T-K-O-N with a capital O, that could take over children, and an evil one who would mate with human females to produce black-eyed, chalky-skinned children. These children were killed by the tribe soon after birth and burned to stop them from resurrecting. Children wandering alone in the woods could also be taken over by the Otkon and would reemerge with black eyes and pale skin, acting nervously while repeating themselves over and over. Their goal was to destroy the tribe and infect all the people with Otkon. Now, I don't know. I've never really read anything in Iroquois lore, but that when I stumbled across that was fascinating. I'm actually going to do a little deeper dive into that and see if that can be debunked. Again, you hear this stuff. Do some of your research too. Some of this stuff is fascinating. But my questions that I come up with as I was reading about these black-eyed children, why do they want permission to enter? Why do they need permission to enter, I guess, is another question. And to what end? Is it like the Iroquois to possess them or to kill them? I don't know. Are they demons? Do they bring bad luck? Do they actually really drain energy? I mean, people have claimed that they're just exhausted after running into these. Are they alien hybrids? Or is this maybe another type of myth that we can look into that's really unknown at this point? But the black-eyed children are certainly a fascinating urban legend. Like I said, it's certainly creepy. But to me, it lends, you know, the most fascinating aspect would be hybrid aliens. But certainly I can see where people would lean onto something like more of the demonic with black-eyed children. I don't know. I hope I never run into one. And if you know anybody, actually a friend of mine said she knew a girl who claimed she ran into one. So maybe I'll be able to get that story on here sometime. Sometimes people see something like that and they don't want to talk about it again. Kind of like a bad dream, you know. But we'll do a deep dive into the Iroquois thing and see what we can find out. But if you have any interesting stories or any urban legends that you'd like me to talk about or research or share with us on the show, drop me an email, cyrus.alderwood@gmail.com, or follow me on Twitter, Facebook, or contact me over on cyrusalderwood.com. Next episode, I'm not sure what I'll get into. I've got a list of topics I want to get into, but I've been trying to record a little bit more often, at least, you know, 20, 30 minutes here and there. Even if it's just bitching about a pet peeve, or maybe I am your pet peeve. Maybe my bitching is your pet peeve. You can let me know about that too. But I wanted to bring up one other thing though, again, with the podcast, I don't normally talk about my books on here, but you know, if you get an opportunity, jump over to Amazon and check out one of my books. I'm actually working on the third book in the Gonzo Chronicles series. Speaking of the devil, right? And demons, and some of the stuff we're talking about today. If you remember in the second book, Barry Dick accidentally got drunk and accidentally sold his soul to the devil. And now he can play the harmonica like a blues puckered god. But anyway, he wants his soul back. And this is what we're doing in the third one. It takes place in California and traveling through the Superstition Mountains. So it's kind of an interesting take on, you know, the old blues legend of Robert Johnson selling his soul to Crossroads to become a blues legend. So anyway, if you get an opportunity, jump over there. This podcast is free. I don't do any Patreon or any of that bullshit for people to, you know, fork out a monthly, you know, $5 or whatever. If you do want to do me a solid, help me keep the lights on, help me keep the show going, just jump over to Amazon, buy one of my books. We're getting close to Halloween. I've got a couple of short story compilations that are in the horror genre. One's called Dark Places. The other one's called Bedtime Stories for the Terminally Afraid. I know the cover on that one's not that great, but these are very cheap on Kindle, and I don't charge very much for the paperbacks either. I think $12.95 is the most I'd charge on a paperback, except for a couple that were like really huge monumental books. You know, I have to charge like $15 to make a couple. So, yeah, it's getting close to Halloween. Bedtime Stories for the Terminally Afraid. There's a couple of like really, really creative stories in there that are just off the wall. I've got the craziest vampire and zombie story you've ever probably have ever read. Well, hell, at least I like to think so. So if you get a chance, jump over to Amazon, pick up one of my books, and I certainly appreciate it. If you like it, share it with somebody else. If it sucks, just shit, man, don't tell anybody. Keep that to yourself. But anyway, I hope you like the books. Hope you like the show, and touch base, and we'll be back soon. Take care, everyone.